Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Wrap-Up, a production of The Balance. Join Tom and $2 Bill Josh as they wrap up the last 24 hours of sports for you. Right now, here's Tom and $2 Bill Josh.
I am Optimus Prime, and I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.
Welcome to The Balance, to The Wrap-Up, right here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Tom Marquis. Right alongside me is my partner in crime, the usual suspect, Mr. R.J. Cunningham. R.J., why did I just do that? Josh, please tell me not to ever do that again. $2 Bill Josh. Josh, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Tom?
Good. You know what? RJ is nowhere around. I don't know how that happened. I was going through some stupid emails and trying to multitask, and so I apologize. That will never happen again, buddy.
Yeah, don't sweat the small stuff, especially after Saturday.
That's right. Well, and that brings up a very, very good point. I mean, typically we're very upbeat here on The Balance and The Balance Wrap-Up, and but we're not tonight. Obviously, we our mood is somewhat subdued this Monday as the events that happened over the weekend at the Indiana State Fair. Now, Josh, I know you were there right in the middle of the action. We certainly do want to get your story. But what we want to do is just kind of bring people up to speed what has happened in Indianapolis. For those of you that do not know, the Indiana State Fair had a huge tragedy that you may have seen on all different types of national news outlets. Concert goers were preparing to see the band Sugarland just after the opening act, and a gust of wind from a storm front that was coming in and moving in through the Indianapolis area. A severe weather alert was given. But a very short few minutes after that, a scaffold blew over, and obviously five people tragically lost their life, and many, many others were hurt. 40, 50 at the last count were injured in this accident. And we do want to get to the sports of the day, and we do want to talk a little bit about IndyCar, and we want to talk about the Colts. But one of the things we want to do first and foremost is we want to make sure that we show our support for the families and the friends of the families and everyone that was involved in this tragic accident in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the State Fairgrounds. Now, Josh, I know you were there, so without further ado, go ahead and give us your story and your side of it and what you saw, what went on down there.
Well, it was a beautiful evening. You know, when Sarah Bareilles took the stage about 7:30, it was beautiful, and it was sunny, and everybody was hyped up, and I was sitting in the fourth row, almost close enough I could reach out and touch the stage. I thought it looked like it was going to be a great evening. She finished up about 8:30. The sky was still beautiful. Contrary to what they reported on the news, there was no evacuation order given. About 8:57, they said there might be a severe storm coming through, so we might have to evacuate. And the guy no more left the stage than the whole thing came tumbling down. It's kind of like, you know, it's happening pretty quickly. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, time. I know you've been in combat. Like, you could see what was happening, but it seemed like it was happening in slow motion, even though it happened very, very rapidly. Luckily, my mom had called me 3 minutes early and told me there was a storm coming, because at least one, if not two, of the people that lost their life on set Saturday evening, we're sitting in the same row I had just left. So it was, yeah, I haven't been watching too much news or reading the local paper lately. I don't need to see the pictures to remember Saturday evening. I don't think I'll ever forget it. That being said, my heart, my prayers and condolences go out to the families as well as those who are still in the hospital. I got a couple minor scrapes and cuts, but nothing too serious, so I guess I lucked out okay.
Well, you know, and obviously, you know, the good Lord and your guardian angels was looking out for you, Josh, and we appreciate you giving us the story. Josh, what I know we've heard several stories of people who just rushed to the wreckage to try to pull people out from underneath the scaffold that had fallen. Tell us a little bit about the scene as far as immediately after it happened. What was going on?
Well, myself along with several other hundred people, and this is what makes me proud to be an Indiana Hoosier. Now, I talk about Indiana University, although I'm proud to be an IU fan. They rushed the scene. You know, a lot of times you figured people would run away from the scene, and there were certainly people who did. But everybody pitched in and tried to lift the stage up, and one of the cops, who was also an Army vet, said it was kind of similar to something he'd see when he was over on the battlefield. You know, you hear people screaming, "I don't want to die," and you see people like, you know, "No, it's already too late." Don't want to get too much into all the gruesome details.
Okay. Now, the way I understand it, Sugar Land, and there was nobody on the stage, correct, at the time?
Actually, there was a guy on stage that was going to work, that was doing the spotlight. He was 20 feet above the stage, and he tragically lost his life yesterday morning.
Okay. So he was the only person on the stage at the time. Now, I know Sugar Land has issued some various different statements and to the fact. Now, what do we know, Josh, as far as – now, you said there was no evacuation order given. I don't know that I ever heard that there was one given. I think that they were contemplating on whether or not one needed to be given. And my question to you, or maybe you don't know the answer to this, but here's the thing. The way that I understand this timeline, even if an evacuation order had been given, there was only 10 minutes – available, or maybe a 10-minute window there from the time that this storm made itself known to the time. So would, in reality, if we lived in a perfect world, an evacuation notice had been given, do you think that the outcome would have been different?
Actually, I think it might have actually been worse, because you would have had people coming out of the grandstands onto the track, and you would add the people from the seats on the track trying to escape. Now, the skies got dark, I'm going to say, about 8:45. And about 8:57 from the stage collapsed. I don't think there's any way you can safely evacuate 12,000 people in 12 minutes. So I'm actually going to say that might have made it worse.
Okay. Well, like I said, we were downtown at the drum corps championship when this whole thing came, and really we had no idea what was going on. They didn't make that announcement at Lucas Oil. What they did say was that there was a severe storm in the area and to stay away from the windows and doors, and that they would notify, that the stadium officials would notify if any further action needs to be done. And I don't know if that was just to not create a panic inside of Lucas or what it was, because when that announcement was given, I believe, the way I understand this timeline, that this tragedy had already happened. The thing is, I think that this is just a sad situation. It was a freak thing. Like I said, you know, in my opinion, and I don't have the facts to back this up, but I would say this has been the worst tragedy since the 1963 or 65 natural gas explosion at uh, the uh, the State Fair Coliseum, which is now the Pepsi Coliseum. And ironically enough, they're again at the State Fairgrounds. Now, this company called MidAmerica, which is the company that put together the scaffold for the concert, has been doing concerts there and several other venues all over the United States for many, many years, and have almost a spotless record. So, I mean, when situations like this happen, I mean, many times we want to jump to the forefront and point fingers, and I want to be the guy that says, let's not do that. Let's let the investigation lead where it leads. But at the moment, Josh, I think this was just nothing more than a freakish accident created by Mother Nature.
I would agree, except for one thing. It had already happened to Sugarland once this year. The exact...
Okay, I had not heard that. Not at all.
Basically, the exact same thing had already happened to Sugarland in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, not even 4 weeks before.
This exact same thing.
The way I describe it, the stage or part of the stage in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, fell into the crowd. There, too, they're not releasing the figures on the fatalities, although I've been told there were several in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, as well.
Okay, well, that's something that we want to check into. It's a sad thing. Obviously, there's no guarantees in life, and it's just a sad situation. Again, for those of you that don't know, Josh Elmore, $2 bill Josh, was at the Sugarland concert on Saturday night when wind gusts between 60 and 70 miles an hour toppled the stage. There was an estimated about 12,000 people that was there waiting for the concert. Now, fair officials said that there was no other damage on the fairgrounds and that all 47 Indiana State Fair rides passed a new round of inspections on Monday morning. And right over by my office is the fairgrounds. Josh, just kind of a somber time driving by that this time of year, and it was pretty dead. And it was just, you know, it was kind of nice to hear the state fair train go by and blow his horns. And, you know, I'm sure that the state fair is on it. I know that all the concerts have been rescheduled or canceled. I know Janet Jackson and Train and numerous others have been moved or will be moved to a different location. And they're talking about Verizon, White River Park, and Conseco. So obviously if there's questions that you have, I would consult Ticketmaster.com, or I would go to the Indiana State Fair's website. Well, Josh, we're glad that you made it out and that everything is fine. And we hate to be the Debbie Downers on a Monday, but we just felt like we needed to share this story, and we felt like we needed Josh to have the opportunity to tell the listeners what it was that he saw there at the Indiana State Fair. All right, Josh, of course, one of the things that was going on Saturday night that obviously has fallen to the back of the burner, which I'm sure the Colts are completely fine with that and on many levels, but obviously they understand that this is far more important news than what they were doing in St. Louis on Saturday night. Now, that said, let's just try to recompose here and bring us back to the balance here. The Colts released Nate Davis, a popular quarterback from right here in Indiana, from Ball State, and Ball State fans are probably scratching their heads and wondering why. And here's what I see. I see that the Colts are very, very loyal to their backup quarterback. I mean, let's look at Sorgi. He was there for a long time, and I don't think that this is any indication that Curtis Painter is the heir to the throne. I don't think that we need to read too much into the interceptions that were thrown. I don't think that game on Saturday night was even designed to look at the quarterbacks. I think it was designed to look at the new rookies, to look at special teams, and to kind of see where some of the fat was that they needed to trim. Obviously, they felt like they weren't going anywhere with Nate Davis. Like I said, he's a very good quarterback, has a lot of talent, and I think that he'll land a job in the NFL somewhere. It just wasn't the match here in Indianapolis. Josh, what are your thoughts on the Colts, the first preseason game, the rookies, Curtis Painter, the release of Nate Davis?
Well, I'm actually disappointed we released Nate Davis. To me, he appeared to be the best of the three quarterbacks that took the field on Saturday night. I can certainly understand it. Like you said, the Colts are loyal to Curtis Painter, as they were Jim Cergi. I don't get it with Curtis Painter. I don't get Bill Polian's man-crush love affair with Curtis Painter. I don't understand it. It defies logic. But at the end of the day, nobody's going to be allowed to come into Indianapolis Colts and do anything to threaten the security of Bill Polian's boy, Curtis Painter. At the end of the day, I really think that's what the Nate Davis story comes down to. He perhaps looked a little better than Curtis Painter, and rather than listen to fans saying he's released Curtis Painter, he released the threat to Painter's job security. I personally think that's what all that was.
And you might be right about that, and obviously that'll always be left to speculation, I suppose. But, you know, you never know. You never know. And so I guess what we want to look at is, I mean, I you know, the question is posed is a lot of times is what do you think that the job Chris and Bill Polian are doing at the heads of the front office? I personally think they're doing a very good job. Could they do better? Heck yeah. But I don't think that we should fire them. I don't think that they're doing bad. I don't even think that they're in fair doing a fair job. I think they're doing a very good job. And obviously Bill Polian was the mastermind behind bringing Peyton Manning and many other greats to the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, so I think that his legacy is still being written. He's obviously a great mind and strategist. So, I mean, I don't know that Jim Caldwell is that worried about his quarterbacks. Like I said, I think that you know, I think that it'll all pan out. Here's the question for you, Josh, and we can certainly get into this on Saturday. Now, a few years ago, you were leading the charge maybe even have T-shirts and coffee mugs done to fire Jim Caldwell. Has your tune changed at all? What do you think Jim Caldwell is doing? How do you think he's doing as a head coach?
Well, I think he's doing all right. He hasn't really shown that he can get the job done in the playoffs. He got the Colts to the Super Bowl, and he was out-coached. And Rex Ryan completely out-coached him in last year's playoff game. I think he's doing all right. I don't know if he's a long-term solution. I don't think he'll be around much after Peyton Manning retires. I think maybe they would have replaced him if they could have. I don't know. Jim Irsay seems to be really, really loyal. This is his third season, though. If he can't get it done this year, then maybe it's time for him to go.
Well, and maybe it is. I'd hate to see Jim Caldwell go. He was hand-picked, hand-groomed by Tony Dungy. I think that, you know, we'll see what happens. And so I do want to kind of let it go with that, because we only got a short amount of time. We want to cram in a lot of other stuff. You know, a couple other teams out there that really have big problems that they need to address is obviously the Cowboys. And the Bears. Both of those teams are still having major issues. The Bears with their offensive line, I know it's still early, but the problems are still there and don't seem to be going away anytime soon, Josh. So what are your thoughts on the Bears? What do the Bears need to do to fix their problem in Chicago? Hello, Josh?
I think the problem, I believe you said with the Bears, is a little bit of you cut out there a little bit. I actually thought the Bears looked okay. I think they'll be all right. They maybe need a better answer quarterback. Maybe Jay Cutler's not the answer. As far as the Cowboys, I believe you were talking about them too.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tony Romo's the problem. I don't know that he really got a whole lot of playing time on Saturday. Well, I believe the game might have been on Thursday, but whenever it was. I don't really think you can judge whether the Cowboys have gotten better or not until they put on the pads in the month of September in a regular season game.
Right. Well, basically, the Cowboys have got to do a better job of fixing their secondary issues, or they won't be successful running Rob Ryan's scheme. Dallas's front did not look like it could carry the secondary, and I think they're going to need a few more coverage men. And speaking of the NFC West out there, I think Sam Bradford right now is the only quarterback out there in the NFC who can lead his team to the playoffs. It's way too early to see what Kevin Cobb can do out there in the Cardinals. And if they don't protect him better, he's going to struggle all year long anyway. And then we're going to be asking the question, why did Kevin Cobb even go to the Cardinals? All quarterbacks, need a little extra time, including number 18, Peyton Manning. Obviously, the Giants have a better play than Hoshim and Yawaba in their defensive lines. You know, I don't even know. How do people get these names? I don't get it, Josh. I really don't know. But anyway, this is a perfect opportunity for us to push next week's show. Obviously, there's still a little bit of time for you guys to get involved with the ballots. We're going to be having our live draft at BW3's in Speedway on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. So make sure that you sign up for that. Send us an email on the balance. Just leave us a comment on the balance or on our Facebook page. Say, hey, I want to play fantasy football, and we'll get with you. Real quickly, Josh, we've got the balance gridiron coming up Saturday morning. Tell our listeners what they can expect to hear come Saturday morning right around the corner with the balance gridiron.
Well, we're going to preview the Big Ten. We're going to preview Indiana University. We're going to talk about the expansion in college football. For those of you who missed it on Saturday, I'm kind of going to bring up the whole Coach Wilson, Jack Trudeau storyline, explain why that's not acceptable behavior out of the new IU football coach and why, if it doesn't stop, he needs to be removed. We're going to talk about the national picture. We're going to talk about the Heisman Trophy. And I'm going to tell you who's going to win the BCS National Championship and what I'll do the day of the national title game if I'm wrong.
Okay. Well, we'll be excited to hear that. All right. Well, moving on to bigger and maybe not better things, but maybe not even bigger. Just moving on to something else, a different topic. We got a lot to cover in a 30-minute period. I tell you what, out there in New Hampshire, Josh, Murphy's Law at best, everything that could go wrong at NHMS went wrong on the movethatblock.com 225. What a mouthful. But, you know, right place, right time, right place for Ryan Hunter-Reay. But I think bigger questions is the IndyCar really blew it when it come to the restart on this. I don't know really what all how that decision came together. Obviously, you know, covering IndyCar and so forth, I don't think that this is anything that's indicative of anything that's come. I don't know that anybody got NASCAR fever, got to finish under green. Obviously, something went wrong there, Josh. The IRL and IZOT IndyCar dropped the ball Sunday in New Hampshire. How could something like this happen?
I'm not quite sure if there was a lack of communication between Brian Barnhart and the track safety crew or what exactly it is, but that's it in a nutshell. That is IndyCar. I hate to say it. I'm a huge Indianapolis 500 fan. We here on the balance love covering the IndyCar series, but at the end of the day, they're no more for screwing up than they are for getting things right. You had the screw-up in Texas you have yesterday. I don't know if it's Randy Bernard. I don't know if it's Brian Barnhart. But if you watch the race on TV, first of all, there's nobody there. Like, next to nobody in New Hampshire cared about that race. And then that finish. I don't get it.
You're absolutely right. And here's the thing. That proposes a very, very, very good question. If you live within 2 hours of that racetrack out there in New England, I mean, there's not a lot of other races. I mean, I don't know. I'm really disappointed in that whole situation as well. I don't know who's in charge of advertising the sport at each particular track, if it's the league or the responsibility of the local media or the promoters or everyone there above. I don't know why more was not done. I mean, New England has some of the most disposable income in the country, and I don't think that there was very little done that created an urgency for fans to come out to the track there on Sunday, Josh. And I don't know that this is really a good thing for IndyCar. I think this has become a public relations nightmare.
I would have to agree. And here's something else I think is troubling for IndyCar. They always mention the winner of the NASCAR race on SportsCenter. But the last two races, I know we call them talking about the IndyCar winner at all. So something is going on in IndyCar, and I'm a big IndyCar fan. As those who followed the show for a long time have known. Something needs to be done before IndyCar becomes completely irrelevant. Before it becomes basically as relevant as women's professional soccer. And it's well on its way, especially with Danica Patrick leaving to be an irrelevant sport. They got to market better. They got to have more competitive races. They can't make boneheaded moves like they did yesterday. At least Brian Barnhart owned up to it being a stupid decision.
I agree. You know, I'm not a big proponent of public display of lack of affection, but I think Will Power, or his new nickname, Chief Flipping Bird, did what most fans and most drivers felt about the last restart, and maybe not the right way to go about it. I don't know that he'll be fined or anything like that, Josh, but we'll be curious to find out how that goes. Guys, we're running out of time. We have just a very short amount of time left in the wrap-up today. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on The Balance, www.thebalanceonline.com. Josh, give us real quickly the 60-second timeout.
Well, tune in and watch the Jets-Texans tonight. And if you've been following the Fairgrounds tour and you didn't get a chance to make it to the memorial service, which I did, go on IndyStar.com. And watch the videotape of the memorial service. It was a very fitting memorial service, and it was good to see a lot of big-name people at the memorial service today. And it was also good just to get a chance to connect with people.
All right, Josh. Well, that's going to do it. Guys, you've been wrapped up here on The Balance on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Josh, you have a great evening.